Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gagish of the Pedowitz Group, and welcome to WRMR Revenue Marketer Radio. This week, we'll be talking about a really incredibly fascinating topic, and that's building out the global demand generation structure. And as you guys know by now, every Thursday at 2 o'clock, we meet to talk to a real revenue marketer and learn tips and tricks on how they've made that transition from traditional marketing to revenue marketing. And it's more than just listening. This is an interactive show, so please feel free to call in or chat. And we are delighted to include you in the dialogue. This week's guest is special because not only is she a demand generation professional, but she's also an employee in our company. And one of the things that we try to do with the Pedowitz Group is when we hire people to come in and work with our clients, we want people who have been there and done that. We want people with real practical experience. And Angela Sanders certainly brings that. Angela comes to us from Aon Risk Management Services, where she was the Director of Marketing Operations for a 30-person global demand generation organization. In her 6.5 years at Aon, her last 3 years were spent in helping build out this global organization. She's an 11-year marketing professional, having covered everything from communications to operations, and she's based out of Indianapolis. Angela, welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Debbie.
It is such a pleasure to have you on the show. And again, all of a sudden, I would say in the last 3 to 4 months, I have probably gotten more questions around, you know, how do I build out a global demand generation organization? What are the skills? How do you do it? So we're delighted to have you on the show to talk about that topic. So why don't you begin by telling us a little bit around the demand generation journey and kind of how it started at Aon?
Well, it was interesting because there was a project that started to put into place a centralized, standardized CRM platform. And that really came from the CEO of the organization, wanting to put that into place to get visibility across, you know, this huge global organization with offices in 500 different countries, and to really try to see and forecast revenue moving forward and get a full picture. So they started that project. And as I see a lot in working with large companies today, you'll put into place a CRM system. It looks like it's got some marketing capabilities, but when you really dig under the covers, it's meant to be a sales system, not a marketing system. And so we saw that there was a gap. And so we started to explore how to fill that gap and how to really build out some good marketing infrastructure. And we started looking around at different marketing automation vendors that we could patch on to the CRM system to expand the capabilities and really do some great things. So that's when we came across, there's a number of different vendors in this space. We ended up buying Eloqua at that time, and we had Salesforce.com as the CRM system in place. And so we used those two together. And really, once we had the technology in place, then we really started building out the team and the processes and everything else that went around that.
So it was probably a lot easier to select and implement the technology than it was to make changes around team and process.
Absolutely, yeah. It's very difficult because most large marketing organizations, and Aon was no different, are very siloed around product marketing and then specific marketing functions like events or public relations or things like that. And it's hard to... because you have to shift your entire marketing organization and build it differently so that you don't have those silos anymore and you think about it more from the standpoint of the audience that you're trying to get to and building up capabilities that are going to reach those audiences.
So let's kind of go back and let's kind of talk about a little bit around timelines on that, Angela, and then I definitely want to spend some more time just understanding how you were able to change process and how you were able to kind of to build that team. So So once you guys had rolled out Salesforce.com on a global basis, and then you begin to see that gap that was in place, understanding that marketing needed to be able to make more of a revenue contribution, and you really needed to go kind of down this demand generation path, did you guys have a vision for what that global organization would look like as an end game, or did you guys kind of grow into this over time?
We did have a basic vision of what it was going to look like, and I would say that definitely changed over time as we got more mature and started to learn more about the capabilities and where we could go with it. But we definitely had a vision up front of bringing all of those processes together and to be able to actually generate revenue out of the marketing department as opposed to just having the marketing department be reactionary to whatever the sales team needed in terms of brochures and events.
So tell me a little bit about your ads, you know, when you guys first began the project. Tell me what your global marketing structure looked like, and then describe for me the structure that you guys went to.
Sure. So there's a CMO that works across all business units, and then each business unit had their own marketing department. And typically what happened is within the business unit, there would be a separate marketing department in each major region around the world. So it was very siloed from a geographic standpoint. And then within the marketing department, it was again siloed into people who were focused on marketing for specific product lines, marketing for corporate events, corporate communications. So there were a lot of silos going on, not a lot of people working together. And what we did is put into place an operational team that basically started to work across all of those silos and bring them all together. So they still all existed, and all those people still existed, but we started to come in and put into place a set of processes that said, when you're ready to do demand generation and campaigns, you come to our team and we will help you execute those, plan them, execute them, and measure those. When you're going to do an event, you come to us and we'll help you execute and measure on the event. When you're going for a specific product line marketing campaign, come to us and we'll help you execute and measure those. So it really started working across all those, and it was a very non-threatening way to approach that. So you're not coming in and just wiping out your existing marketing team and starting over. You're really putting into place a separate team that's going to help everyone.
So now you guys, the global marketing organization supports at Aon supported 500 countries, and how many solutions?
Oh gosh, hundreds of solutions. There were several major product lines, and then you know hundreds and hundreds of different individual products underneath that. So there was a lot.
Okay, and how large was the global sales organization?
Gosh, I don't even know. Well over 1,000.
Okay, and the number of global marketers?
Global marketers, there were probably people that had some sort of marketing in their title in the 300 to 400 range. So there were a lot of people that were playing marketing as part of their role, and they had other roles as well.
Okay. So what you guys did was, again, in this global siloed structure, rather than trying to infuse each of these people with skills and technology and know-how for how to do demand generation, you said what we're going to do is we're going to build this kind of an overlay group, kind of like an operations group. And, and then when the people are ready to run campaigns, they would come to you and you had a process for working with them and then executing campaigns on their behalf. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And then that kind of grew more into our team having our own set of strategy around demand generation and being able to drive those campaigns as well and then go proactively back into the siloed groups and show them how they could take advantage of this to actually drive revenue.
Okay. So how long did it – well, first of all, this team, this you called it – this was called marketing operations at Aon, correct?
Okay. It was really marketing and sales operations together.
So it was marketing and sales operations. And the part that was responsible for demand generation, how many people were on that overlay team?
We had maybe 5 to 7 people on that team.
Okay. 5 to 7 people on that team, and you were executing campaigns on behalf of the Globe, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then how did you introduce this notion to the organization?
We really introduced it as part of the CRM training. So there was a whole big effort as the new CRM system was rolling out across the globe to go into offices and do training. And we made it part of that because from a salesperson's point of view, all they need to know is how to react to these leads that they're getting. So we rolled that out. And then from the marketing point of view, there were lots of different types of meetings, global meetings, where we had the opportunity to go in and talk about this vision. We tried rolling it out in the U.S. only immediately, and then we were going to take our time rolling out across the globe. And what happened was as soon as people got wind of this, I had people from all over the globe coming to me wanting to jump on board. So I was doing training sessions, and I remember I was doing a whole bunch of training sessions in February and March of 2007, and I had to add on a trip at the last moment to the UK to go train their team because they were so excited, and I showed up and there was a room of about 20 people in the UK, 20 marketers, that wanted to learn this new system and get on board, and it really took off like wildfire.
That's absolutely amazing. So the field could execute campaigns at a field level as well?
Yeah, so that's kind of part of the structure we started putting into place is there were a lot of people in the field offices that did their own marketing. And Aon, like a lot of global companies, large companies, is a company of acquisitions that was built through acquisition. And so there were a lot of field offices that had once been a separate company, and they were wrapped into the Aon umbrella. So they still had their own people out in the field. Those people honestly know the most about that marketplace and how to market to them, what types of campaigns are going to work. So we tried to push down as far as possible that execution, and we actually created a role at the sales office level. So we had one in each major sales office, and then we had kind of regional roles for smaller sales offices. And it was a joint marketing and sales coordinator role, marketing and sales operations coordinator, and they were the person who would actually be executing those campaigns at the sales office level. They'd be getting the right targets into the campaign, doing their own segmentation, managing the leads that came out of that, managing any leads that might have come from corporate events, trade shows, that type of thing that came to their office, and really were responsible and accountable that those leads made it through the life cycle and that the sales team understood what to do with those.
So that's really interesting. So let me make sure I've got the timing of events, because, again, this is endlessly fascinating for any organization looking to deploy or actually put into place a global demand generation practice. So the first thing that you did was you created this marketing operations group. So kind of like a phase one, let us do this for you. And then as part of that, in that time frame, you also began to educate the field around what they could do if they had the appetite for it. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And we stayed under the radar in the beginning so that we could, build up those good case studies of how it worked and to make sure that it did work before we went rolling it out too far.
Okay. And so how long did you guys work as an ops team kind of under the radar before you began communicating and pushing that capability into the field?
It was about 4 to 6 months from the time that we implemented the marketing automation system until we really started pushing it out to the field. So we started out doing training in a couple of pilot offices, rolling out some campaigns, making sure we got some good results, and then we took it global. Very quickly, probably within a 6-month time frame from there, it was pretty global.
So during that time frame, you used the comment, we wanted to make sure that it worked. Were you guys mm-hmm. actually running a pilot? Did you consider it a pilot phase?
We did. We did run some pilot campaigns, ran a pilot phase of the marketing automation system before we signed a full contract to make sure that it was fairly new technology, definitely new to us, and we wanted to make sure that it was worth the investment before you go putting a lot of money and a lot of, beyond just the money you spend on the technology tool, you spend a lot of money and time and effort building up those processes and those teams to support that.
So in that 4 to 6 months, when you guys were kind of working, under the cover, so to speak. So what kind of best practices and templates and learnings were you guys able to gather before you began to push this out into the field for a broader acceptance and use?
It was interesting. We had taken a campaign that was originally run as a direct mail campaign in the Netherlands and adapted it for the U.S. market and ran it as a multi-channel campaign where we did a direct mail piece, email following that up, and then some telemarketing on the back end of that. And had some really great results in a couple of offices on that. And so we were able to really show that the multi-channel campaigns could have a big impact. And I think that was something that it was a little bit of a scary step for a lot of the marketing organizations to, go from something that was primarily direct mail, primarily event-driven, to something that was more driven by electronic means and email, and to be able to show that made a difference to add on the electronic pieces was really interesting. So we were able to do that. So we created some nice templated campaigns that could then be taken and rolled out in different regions. They just needed to adjust for their region. So I think we learned a lot of interesting things there.
Okay, so one of the areas that I'm really interested in is clearly it's a big step. When you've never done this before, it's scary. When you're used to being an event-driven organization, when you're used to being a direct mail organization, when you're used to non-digital, so to speak, it can be kind of scary. So what are some mm-hmm. of the kinds of things that you guys did, Angela, that helped these marketers feel a little bit more comfortable and not threatened by this?
I think first of all, just kind of marrying it together with some other channels definitely helped. An easy way to step into it is to really look at your events because there's a lot of communication around those events that can go electronically, and I think most people are comfortable with those communications being electronic. So if you start there and say, I have this lunch and learn that we run, let's start sending out the invitations through a system where we can actually track all that activity back in. And then you start to see when you have a marketing automation system, you're actually hooked into more than just that email. You're hooked into other activities that that target is doing, and you start to bring it all back together in one system and get a better view, and now you go into that event knowing not only did this person sign up for this event, but they've been surfing around our website, they've been downloading our white papers on this topic. There are more touch points there, and so you have a much more qualified lead coming out of the back end of that. And then the challenge is to be able to take those leads coming out of an event, qualify those, and somehow get those over the wall to the sales team.
So interesting, and I had not thought about that before, but clearly when you've got a global marketing organization and you're moving toward this new way to market, marrying with other channels that they're comfortable with. So instead of saying, we're replacing that, you just say, we're going to add on to it. And then you're right, around events, because a lot of these global organizations do lots of events. So it's very non-threatening to say, let's begin digital communication around that event. And then again, once in these very simple steps, you can show the marketer and they can now begin to see the insight into behavior. I would imagine that got them pretty excited.
It did, and there was one very large event that we did every year out of the Aon Risk Services Group that a lot of the marketing dollars were spent on. And we sent, you know, literally like 300 to 400 salespeople to this show. It was just such a huge event. And traditionally, we had no idea what came out of it. There was no way to track any of that. And it was really great that we were able to go in and start tracking that event in a number of different ways. We were sending communications up front through the marketing automation system and tracking that back. We were sending surveys before the show and tracking that back to generate leads even before the show began. On site, there were a lot of meetings that happened. We tracked those meetings back into the CRM system. And then coming out of the show, we had a whole list because we were tracking people through barcode scanning at every one of our events and at our booth. So we were able to take that whole list of everyone who came, and now we had a whole marketing list to start some marketing campaigns after the show. And having the combination of a CRM system that was standardized and that marketing automation system, we were actually able to start tracking how much revenue came out of that show and whether we were actually meeting the revenue targets that had been set out for this.
That is absolutely an amazing story. And again, it's a very frustrating thing. The company says we have to do the show. Marketers set it up. They run the show. Then somebody says, well, we get out of the show, and marketers are just stuck there with no proof point for anything. So
right.
I can see where that was probably a very, very strong gotcha. I want to go back to the question when you said it was kind of scary. And some of the tactical things that you guys did to get the marketers on board with what you were doing was marrying with other channels and also communicating around events. What mm-hmm. else did you do to help marketers make this transition so they didn't feel threatened?
Well, we definitely had to have those case studies in place. And so when you go into a marketing organization where they're getting beat up on how much money they're costing the organization and getting asked the question every day, what are you getting back out of this? And if you've got a case study where you can go in and show, you know, here is a campaign that was run successfully in this region and we got this many leads and this much revenue out of it and we think we can replicate that in your region, that's definitely, it's very strong. And, you know, the people that were there were very willing to upgrade their skill set so that they could, you know, kind of take on the marketing automation as well and roll that out within their regions. I don't think it's something where you have to think about going in and getting rid of your marketing organization and starting over again. But there's definitely some skill gaps there. So you've got to find the right people. And it's not always the one who was in charge of marketing previously. There might be other people within the marketing department that just get technology better and get the whole demand generation idea a whole lot better.
So this is interesting, and I want to go down this track now. So one of the things that you talked about was, of course, giving marketers case studies. You're being beat up, and they can, you know, finally prove the value. That's great. And the other thing you talked about was upgrading the skill set, and that mm-hmm. clearly every organization is going to have some kind of skill gaps. What were the major skill gaps that you guys saw at Aon, and how did you address those skill gaps?
I think the biggest one that I probably saw was around metrics and measurement. As marketers, unless you're a database marketer, most of us are not real comfortable with the numbers. And so to start really digging into that and being able to analyze deeply into the data you're getting back is a pretty big gap in most cases. So I think that's where it comes in handy to set up a role actually for marketing operations that can do some of that centralized number crunching and get that back out to the field to get that data. So I don't think it's something that necessarily everyone needs to learn how to do. I think you can definitely put in, somebody, either you've got someone in your organization already that has that skill set, or you can hire that in and put that role into place. So I think that's a huge one. And I think the one that everyone kind of has to learn, though, is there's a big difference between traditional marketing and online marketing in terms of how you present content and how you drive action and what's going to work. So I think that's definitely something that you see big gaps in, and people not necessarily knowing. They know they want to send out an email, but they don't know how to structure that email to actually get the action they want. So I think there's a lot of great associations out there, training courses on how to actually do that well.
Okay. So clearly gaps that you saw were metrics and measurement, and one of the ways that you guys addressed it was to set up a marketing automation role that in the early days did the centralized number crunching. Mm-hmm. Clearly, moving from traditional to online, there are issues with content, especially content that drives action. How did you guys address that? It was a skill gap for you. What did you guys do specifically to help address this area?
You know, I think it was just a combination of a few people learning that skill set through, you know, outside organizations and associations, and then bringing that back in and really starting to analyze content from different parts of the organization and say, you know, this email did really well and this one did not. Now let's take a look at this and see why that was the case. And starting to teach people, you know, through examples of how to actually fix those. And I think it helps if you've got some process standardization in place. So you can say, you know, here's a standard template, email template for our organization, and it's limited to three paragraphs and a call to action on the side. Well, now you've kind of forced people into the right format for what you want to do.
I think that's absolutely great, and you're right. There's so many great organizations that people can go to, like Sherpa, Marketing Prof. I mean, there's just many, many great places that people, marketing experiments, people can go to learn this. But you're right. It's a big issue, and clearly one of the other gaps that you talked about was the fact that, you know, it's a little bit more technology based as a world, and so you had some people who just, you know, got it because it was kind of part of their DNA. You've got some people who didn't get it, and I think that's kind of a harder thing to train. But were there any other major skill gaps besides metrics and content and driving action that you guys observed that would be good to share with some people who are listening?
I think there's just the overarching strategy of demand generation versus marketing strategy. You know, there's in a traditional marketing department, your marketing strategy centers around, you know, what are those things that your salespeople need? And in a demand generation strategy, you're really looking at it from marketing driving the ship, right? So what is it that we can do independently of what the sales team is doing to really drive that? And I think that's, you know, at least today on, that was a big scary step because it was a very sales-driven organization. I think a lot of B2B companies are very sales-driven organizations and have that challenge.
I love that analogy, and I've never heard it before, Angela, but you're exactly right. A good definition of a traditional marketing organization is marketing drives marketing and sales drives revenue. And in a demand generation model, marketing is now responsible for a portion of the revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's hard. I think it's a hard mindset for marketing to actually be held accountable for revenue. That's really tough. And to say, yes, there is some point when I hand over that lead and I'm no longer responsible for that, but I'm still accountable for that to make sure that lead gets through to a sale. You know, you just kind of assume that's the salesperson's responsibility. Well, from a salesperson's point of view, if you think about it, there's some point at which they don't have control over the process either. You know, the customer has control over whether they're going to buy or not buy, but they're still accountable for that. So we kind of have to change our mindset as marketers and say, look, we're not working against the sales organization. We're working with them to make them successful. So we have to also be held accountable for their goals.
So I'm going to go ahead and dive into this accountability issue because I think it's really important. But then I want to come back to your journey and time frames and things like that. So, did your marketers now have some kind of revenue quota or some kind of something that they were measured against that had an impact on revenue?
We were getting there. So what happened was, and it was kind of a 3-year journey. So back to that journey, it was kind of 3 years. So year one, we did stuff under the radar. You know, we did stuff and we measured it to see what would happen. And we had no idea what our goals were going to be because we didn't know what we could do. Year two, we had a better idea. So we set a goal and we didn't know whether or not we were going to meet it, but we set a goal. And then we were working towards that. As it happens, we actually blew that goal out of the water by about $3 million.
Wow.
Year three, we started getting to the point where, okay, I think we've got a pretty good idea of what our goal should be, and now we're going to take that goal, we're going to divide it up so that every, you know, marketing person, every marketing region has a piece of that goal that they're working towards. And we're going to start to measure that in the same way that the sales department does. You start forecasting. We had the CRM system in place so we could see exactly what was happening to our numbers. Every week we would run the report and see where we were against the numbers and figure out where we had gaps, where we were falling down, and drive it on the numbers and based on the revenue.
That's absolutely fascinating. So this 3-year journey, let me, because the question is, people always ask me all the time, how long does it take to get to competency? And I always tell them it depends, and it depends on a lot of things. Knowing what you know now, Angela, how could you have gone through this 3-year cycle quicker?
You know, definitely having somebody who knows and has been through it before. Up front, we were kind of going through this completely blind. I didn't know what I was doing going into it, and I learned everything on the job. And, you know, it was fine. We got through it. But I think having somebody in place that actually had been through the journey before and knew it probably could have driven some of the decisions quicker.
This is what, 4 years ago, 5 years ago, Angela?
It was about 4 years ago, yep.
I mean, it was a completely different market then. It was like really frontier days 4 years ago.
Absolutely. So there just weren't
people that
had done it.
You would have been hard-pressed to find somebody who had ever done this 4 years ago.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. And today, there are lots of people who have done it and can give you lots of good advice. And I think you also have to drive it top down because if you don't have, you know, a CEO, a CMO, you know, your sales VP on board with all of this, you're going to be throwing stuff over the wall to sales and it's going to land on the floor. So you really have to make sure that everyone understands the vision and pushes it down across the organization. So that definitely drives it quicker.
Okay. So I want to go back to the journey, and you said that year one you guys were kind of working under the radar. And once you had proven your case and also had developed some basic templates and best practices which could be shared, how did you go beginning, I think it was in year three, and begin to push this capability out into the field? Tell me about what that looked like.
Well, we started putting into place that standardized role of the sales and marketing ops coordinator at the field sales level.
And so how many of those did you have around the globe?
There were probably 30 to 50 of those around the globe. There were about 30 in the U.S.
Okay. And so was that a brand new role that got created, or was someone's role taken? I mean, did Aon belly up to the bar for a net new headcount in marketing?
It was a net new headcount. It was one of these where, because of the type of role it was, they took a lot of people out of a more of a office manager or administrative assistant role and put them in it. So it wasn't always a net new headcount. They might have shifted someone, which was a challenge because when offices chose to do that, what would happen is that person would spend 80% of their day on their previous job and then try to cram in this role in the other 20%. So it was a challenge to get the offices to understand this is really a full-time thing. You're expecting someone to come up with a strategy for marketing for your office, to run these campaigns, to manage all the leads that come out of that, to work with the sales team to track those and drive them forward. That's a full-time gig. So
okay.
that was challenging. So that we really drove it down to the field level through that role.
Okay. So how long did it take you to put those 30 to 50 headcount in place?
Not all that long. I think we had most of them within maybe 3 to 6 months.
Okay. All right. So it was a concerted effort once
yep.
it was decided that this is what you were going to do that. And then how did you train these people, Angela? Because that's a lot of people who are now responsible for demand generation at a local level.
It was, absolutely. I mean, we brought them in centrally and did some training on the tools themselves as a starting point. And then, you know, we treated that as a whole separate, you know, department and practice. So we would get on regular meetings a few times a month on the phone because these people, you know, no two people were in the same office. Everyone was spread out all over the place. And so you had to bring them together. We developed kind of project teams within that group so that we had different things and processes that needed to be put into place, and we would put into place a little project team of 3 or 4 of those people who would work together to come up with that process.
So give me an example of one of the things that they worked on.
One of them was a more standardized process around RFPs, so that was more of a sales type of process. But it was something that this role had to deal with every day because they were dealing with both sales and marketing, you know, to put into place a standardized process when an RFP came in the door, how to deal with it. Events was another big one, standardizing running local events. A lot of the offices did a lot of lunch and learns as well as kind of training events for clients. And so they got together and kind of, you know, put together all their best practices around what the different offices did. And we took the most successful ones and put them together into, an event in a box type of process that could be rolled out.
So for example, all your demand generation around the event then became just a template that anybody could use anytime.
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm fascinated by this. So Ann decided to hire this new role, 30 to 50 people. And what was the title of that role? It was a marketing and sales coordinator?
I think it was marketing and sales coordinator is what we ended up with.
Yeah, okay.
It was definitely, it had both titles in that role.
Okay, very, very interesting. And then training, of course, you brought people in centrally to train on the tools. And then you began to, of course, have, meetings to kind of keep everybody abreast and share best practices. And I also love the idea of project teams for standardization because, again, as a global organization, if someone's doing something well or if you can put together a global team to create one set of best practices around something in demand generation and, of course, other areas of marketing, I think that just makes a whole lot of sense to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So let's see. So year one, you guys were under the radar. Year two, when did you begin actively communicating out to the larger marketing community? Was that in year two, and then in year three?
It was year one. We were still we were communicating out to the larger marketing community. We just weren't really setting hard goals as far as what we were doing in year one.
Okay. So did you guys have like a formal communication plan or a really good communication plan that went out to the global marketing organization over this 3-year period?
You know, we did not, and I think that's probably one area that we probably could have improved a lot is it's still, there was a little bit of a divide between traditional marketing and the demand generation, and there wasn't a great effort to actually communicate that and bring it all together into a single marketing organization across the whole company.
Okay, all right. And that makes sense. I mean, there's all kinds of cultural issues in every organization that we work with. One of the things that I get asked quite often, Angela, is How do you do lead scoring for a global organization?
It's tough because it's overwhelming, and people always want to think about lead scoring in terms of product line, because they say, well, you know, the targets are very different for different products. And I think if you think about it that way, absolutely, it's totally overwhelming, and you can't even begin to think about it. But I think if you start to think about it in terms of your audience, and maybe, you know, different levels within your audience, you can definitely build a lead scoring program that takes into account, you know, maybe it's your biggest clients, your medium-sized clients, and your smallest clients. And you start scoring people based on that and getting them through, you know, some other criteria. But I think if you really step back and think about it from the audience level, you'll start to see that the buying behaviors that you're looking for actually are pretty similar across different products and product lines.
So your advice is don't get overwhelmed and start simple.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, pick your five, you know, criteria that you want to start with and just start with that. And again, it's kind of like with the whole implementing a demand generation strategy. You do it, you measure it, and then you can adjust it and figure out what's actually working. And you can do it under the radar pretty easily in the beginning and see if the numbers that are coming out are making any kind of sense.
Okay. So let me ask you this question, and I'm not trying to make you feel uncomfortable, but what was your biggest failure when all this was going on? And how did you handle failure?
We definitely had campaigns that bombed. you know, I think that's why we never did anything huge to start with. You know, we never had, like, this great idea and we took it out to the whole organization at once. It was always start small, and so if you had a failure, it was pretty localized. And so you spent some money on a campaign that bombed. That's okay. Move on. So just take your lessons learned, figure out why it didn't work, and just keep moving forward.
But was it hard? Because a lot of times I find in organizations, marketers have this absolute fear of failure. They feel like their job might be in jeopardy. So was that an issue with the marketing team at Aon?
No, you know what? I think I was very lucky to have an incredibly supportive boss, and he was responsible for both sales and marketing. He was a VP of sales and marketing, and you know, he was just very supportive about failures, and if there was a failure, he wanted us to dig into it and figure out what was wrong so we didn't do it again, but absolutely let us make mistakes.
That's awesome. So he kind of created a culture of experimentation. And,
yep.
You know, and again, and would you say that you learned as much by your failures as you did your successes?
Absolutely. And there were, you know, probably more failures than successes at times. Because you got to try a lot of things before you figure out what works.
Okay, very, very, very interesting. So let's talk a little bit about languages. Are you guys doing campaigns in multiple languages, and how did you handle that?
We did. You know, pushing stuff down into the field as closely as you can to the sales teams is beneficial because you don't have a bunch of people sitting in a corporate office trying to translate. Because when you're doing things in different languages, it isn't just about the translation. It's about knowing the cultural differences to know what's going to work and what people are going to react to. So we definitely pushed all of that down into the individual countries that were running those to make their own decisions on how they wanted to change up the campaign to work for them.
So for the first year when you guys were pretty much in pilot under the radar, you were doing everything in English?
Most of it was in English. If it was in a different language, you know, that was all of the content was supplied to us to execute.
Okay. And so what kind of results was your team able to drive? Can you share any of that with us?
Yeah, there were, you know, a few interesting things. We were able to drive, you know, track over $25 million of revenue a year back to marketing activity. And we also did some metrics around the average deal size. Mm-hmm. And what I found was in the U.S. that the targets that we had been running at least one campaign a month to on a regular basis and we're getting sales out of actually had about a 50% higher average deal size than just the sales that were just done by the sales team alone.
Very, very interesting. And so now that you brought up sales, how did you guys get sales on board with this? I mean, clearly it was a great, great, great structure for you guys to get started that you reported to a VP, the VP of sales and marketing. But what did you guys do to kind of bring sales into the fold, get them collaborative with you, and get them to, you know, play the game, play the demand generation game with you guys?
Yeah, absolutely. That was definitely a challenge. I think part of what helped was we were rolling out CRM at the same time, and so they were learning lots of new things. So it was easy to sneak in one more thing and teach them a little bit about leads. And I think that definitely helped us get there. We also tried to, as much as possible, publish the successes and those metrics and always be showing that we were helping, contributing to that. Our marketing team also, as much as possible, would try to attend sales meetings. Our marketing ops team was divided up so that each one of us were responsible for a certain set of offices, and we would work closely with the sales leaders in those offices to help them develop plans and make them part of the process. That was definitely helpful as well.
I want to revisit a number. You said that the marketing ops team was somewhere between 5 to 7 people, so it went up to 7 people. And you guys supported the globe with that team?
We did. So we were heavily supporting the U.S., and then around the globe you had individual people in each region that were doing the support, and we were supporting those people.
Gotcha. Okay.
Right, so it's kind of a tiered structure.
Yep, and did that tier structure seem to work for you guys?
I think it worked really well. You know, you definitely, as you started doing the training on the tools, somebody would surface. In every region, somebody would just surface that just got it. And like I said, it wasn't necessarily a marketing director. It wasn't the head of marketing. A lot of times it was just one of the field marketers that just got it. And so they were just a natural to take over that role, and you just start communicating with them and help them drive it. They thought it was great. It helped drive their career as well.
So was this marketing ops team all based in the U.S., or were they distributed globally?
Mostly in the U.S., had a couple people in Canada.
Okay. And so lots of time differences. So did you guys work variable hours, or did you pretty much work your standard hours and just communicate at a later date?
We mostly worked standardized hours. You know, there were we would bring people in generally to the U.S. to do in-person meetings. So it's probably most convenient for the U.S. team and most inconvenient for the global teams. But, another thing that we probably could have done better was work a little bit better as a global team.
Okay. Angela, what advice would you give to a company who was looking to roll out a global demand generation infrastructure?
I would definitely say don't think of it just in terms of the technology. You know, you really have to take a look at the full picture, take a look at the people and the processes that you have around that technology, and make sure that you have some of that in place before you put a piece of technology in. So either, you know, outsource that function or put somebody in place that can really drive that project who's been there and done that.
What else?
I think metrics are also very important. Understanding what it is that you're going to drive your success based on and how you're going to measure that success, and then benchmarking that in the beginning so that you can start measuring against that on a regular basis and knowing that you're actually improving through what you've put into place.
Okay. All right. Any other piece of advice? Are those just the two major ones, or anything else come to mind?
I guess the other thing that comes to mind is, I think it really has to be bought into at all levels of the organization. So I think, even your CEO, your CMO, your CFO need to be on board, because if you're fighting upstream on those, it's obviously a big budget item in a large company to put something like this into place. And if you don't have that kind of support, it's going to get cut.
Okay. All right. Well, that's fantastic. And again, you are just a plethora of information. And again, that's part of the radio show. We talk to marketers who have already done this stuff themselves, right? So, I mean, everything that you've shared with us today, the fact that it took 3 years, how you guys addressed people, process, and technology, what skill gaps you found, how you helped your marketers transition, I mean, how you actively got this done across a global organization has just been very, very informative. So, Angela, we thank you so much for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Everyone have a great day and have a great coming up weekend. Thank you.